Thank you for that introduction. I'm gonna sit probably because I can't see very well, and I have stuff to read. Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much for asking me, Donna, to speak. It's amazing being in this program, and I'll start from the beginning. My name is Mary. I'm now college.
Yes.
My sobriety date is April 13th, 2015. That's the last one. Let's see. But before that, 7/5/14 was a really good one because that was a couple days after Cinco de Mayo, and you know, I was ready, at least for a few months anyway. And so then I had a couple of others. Oh, I'm sorry. 5/7/14 was the first one after Cinco de Mayo. Then right after, you know, 4th of July, and then, yeah. Anyway, we all know the story. We've all been there. I'll start, you know, being young and tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. One of my favorite speakers in AA is Joe McHugh from Little Rock, Arkansas. And I got one of his CDs. I think it was one that Denise had actually or had laid out on a table one night at Howe, and I grabbed it. And, oh, my gosh, it's the most inspiring thing to hear him speak because he's one of the early people in AA. He got sober at a time when, you know, before segregation and during segregation, sorry. And he talks about what it was like going to meetings, and people were like, you know, Joe, we like you and everything, but, you know, you're going to have to, you know, come later. You know, you can't come early, and you can't come stay late, and you got to, you know, and I think, wow, we have it so easy now, you know. We can come in and go to any meeting we want. I got the fan because I'm hot. I will get hot in a second because it gets hot in this room, so pardon me. Don't nobody fall asleep. The sound of the fan. You know, and the humility that he has, and it's just something that always really touched me because I think that's one of the biggest things I've gained in here is being humble and realizing that I'm not special. Where is Leanne? I am not special. There's nothing special about me. I came into the room, so I thought, oh my God, I'm not going to tell my story. It's like, you know, they may think I'm just crazy, and I did some really off-the-wall things. But I've realized that it's everybody has done those things at some time or another or something very similar. So when I was growing up, I was the youngest of seven kids. I grew up in down near Fort Benning, Georgia. My dad was retired military. We're a big family, seven of us. I came along. My dad was 45. My mom was 38. And my dad was never a drinker until the Korean War. And when he came back from the Korean War, my mom said, all bets were off. He was a totally different person. And he never even talked about the war unless he was drunk. So he never even liked to do that. And when I saw him drink, it was more of, he was more of a binge drinker. Sometimes he would be gone for days at a time. But he would talk. And I thought, he's not making any sense. And, you know, when I was really young, I didn't want to be around him at all. I would take his beer out in the back and pour it out, and he would get mad. And, you know, I hated it. It smelled, my mom said it smelled like horse pee. It smelled funny. It made him act funny. I thought, I am never, ever going to drink alcohol, if that's what it does. So, grow up, my mom was a teetotaler. She did not drink or smoke or anything. I do believe she went to Al-Anon some, though, and I know that my dad went to AA some because I found his chips later after he died. But I think he got sober. I was about 12, and we went to church a lot back then. So he got saved, and we went to church. And so I hung out with a lot of people that were not drinkers. They were not real partiers until probably, and even in high school, most of my friends were cheerleaders. You know, they were good students. We didn't really drink, you know, or anything. The youngest, I think my earliest memory of drinking alcoholically was 16, and it was at the prom. And we went to a party before the prom, or right after the prom. We went in, got our pictures made, and then went to the party. That's pretty much the way it was, yeah. The band was bad, so we just left. And I got so wasted. And it was terrible. It was humiliating because I pretty much begged one of my best friends, who's the guy I went with, to, you know, make out with me. And, you know, and then I cried all the way home. And then I was, you know, and I'm sure you guys have never done that. but it's like, God, I can't tell that. But, yeah, and it was terrible. And I told him, I said, don't ever mention this again. So it's all already, you know, at 16, I'm, like, suppressing feelings and issues. And as I'm never going to do that again. What may have been another year or so before it happened again, something similar. But never really got off and running until I was about 21 or 22. And I dropped out of college and started working full time. And the place I worked was an industrial bearing company. They did bearings and parts for large machine. There's a lot of plants down in Columbus. I don't know if you guys know. Used to be a lot of mills down there, but anyway, so everybody smoked at their desk because it was their 80s, and they all went out to drink after work. So we all would go and drink after work and eat and drink. And so that, you know, could go either way. I could either get home, I'd be okay, or I would be going home with somebody else. And I have to say I did a lot of that. I did a lot of that in my early 20s. I didn't really know who I was when I was young, and I just wanted to be with anybody who would like me. And it's really sad now that, you know, if you paid any attention to me and you were male, or maybe female, I don't know, mostly men, I would say, well, let's go, you know, let's do this. And then I would always end up hurting myself, and the person, or they would, you know, or vice versa. So, relationships and bad decisions. So when they say stinking thinking, that's the truth. Your thinking is just not right. And it doesn't have to be only when you're drinking. It's all the time, you know. I think that it's interesting. They say you marry your father. I was about 24 and all my friends were getting married. And, oh, this really bad thing that happened when I was about that. About a year before that, I actually did not show up for one of my best friend's weddings because I was hungover. That's how bad it was. And then my other girlfriend that got married to her college sweetheart, and we were best friends all through high school, I got there like barely in time for the ceremony. Hadn't washed my hair, you know, I still probably reeked of alcohol, you know, and they're like in there trying to roll my hair and get me all fixed up. And I'm like, I don't even remember the rest of the ceremony. I mean, that's so sad to think about that now. And when when Donna asked me to tell my story, a lot of things came up that I haven't thought of in years. And, it really kind of got me kind of depressed. But then, you know, it's like God just took over and said, no, people need to hear this. You need to share this and, release the power that it has over you. When I was about 24, I got married to a guy I met at Home Depot. I was working at Home Depot, and he looked so cute on that cherry picker, you know, and he come beep, beep, beeping up to the service desk and say, hey, Mary, you want to go out? Let's go out for a beer after work. All right, let's go. We had a great time. His family was great. They're Irish Catholics from Waukegan, Illinois. They were awesome. We partied. They had a bar in their basement. Yeah, we had a great time, and about about 3 years later, I was like, what in the heck did I do? I like him. He's a nice guy, but, you know, soulmates we are not, you know. And by then we had a daughter, Abby. But I married an alcoholic, you know, it's true. He was a really nice guy. My dad was a nice guy. My dad was a great businessman. As long as he was selling real estate, we were staying in our house, you know, he was good at it, but when he drank, he was gone for days on end. Didn't do any work. But my ex-husband got up, went to work every day, came home and drank every night. And that's all he did. Passed out on the sofa. Still does that to this day. Just a really nice guy though, but I said, you know, I can't do this. So moment of clarity and moved on to another relationship, which, was not great. Well, there were a couple of relationships in between there, you know. But got married, and to my husband I was married to for 15 years, and we really went through spells of drinking and not drinking, and really it wasn't about the drinking. It was more of a social thing with us. But in 2011, when he told me that he didn't want to be married to me anymore, that my drinking kind of went, okay, I'll show you. I'll drink myself to death. You know, I'll show you how you hurt me. I'm going to get on every website that's a dating site. I'm going to go out with all these men. I'm going to find a replacement for you. So there. And of course, he couldn't care less. And I just made myself worse. So I really started drinking heavily in 2011. Still got up, went to work every day. It would take me probably till lunchtime to feel normal, halfway normal. I said I'd never do it again. You know how we always say, shower in the morning, I'm like, I'm never doing this again. God, my head hurts. Oh my God, I feel like, ugh. You know, and then by about 3 or 4 o'clock, you start feeling better after you get some food in you and all that, and start planning what you're going to do for that night. And I love to cook, so I always wanted to plan it around food because it made it seem like it was okay. You know, I get the, you know, the red wine. I'm going to make Italian, you know, or I'm thinking make fish or chicken. I'll get the white, you know, the Pinot Grigio or the Chardonnay. You know, maybe if we're having tacos, I'll get beer, you know. So I would plan it out like I was, you know, I look back now like, what the? It's like everybody could probably see through that, but me, I thought that nobody could. And at this time that I was drinking heavily, I wasn't paying attention to my kids. My daughter suffered a lot because not only had her dad left, but her mom wasn't there either, emotionally. I would just take my drink and my cigarettes and go sit out on the deck, and, you know, that was my night, every night. So during the 2011 to 2015 period, I made a lot of bad choices, bad relationships. I met another alcoholic. We had a great time and moved him right into the house. And, yeah. And my daughter was like locking her door and, you know, wanting to leave. And she hated me. She was like, Mom, you're just going to drink yourself to death. You know, just keep smoking. Just keep drinking. You'll do it. And that's the way I felt. I'm like, who cares? You know, who really cares if I'm alive or not? You know, all these people have hurt me, and I don't deserve it anyway, so who cares, you know? So I did that for a while until my mom got really sick. She had Alzheimer's and lots of other ailments, broken bones and things. And so I would go down to see her, and my brother and I would commiserate over Corona a lot. About her care and everything. And it was a bonding thing. You know, it was really, people say they smoke cigars because it's like a bonding. They sealed the deal with the cigar because it's a bonding experience. Well, that's what we were doing. You know, we were bonding over Mom. And then when she passed away in 2015, and what's sad is my dog had a huge tumor, and I was so out of it that he died a few days after that. I never took him to the vet, you know. I had scheduled him to go like the next week or something, and I didn't. And so that's another thing I kicked myself for. But Mom died, and that was like, wow, okay, Mom's gone. My dad had already died in 1999, so that was a difficult period. And then the next year, my brother died of lung cancer, and then 6 weeks after that, my other brother died of something. I'm not sure what. I think it was an overdose. But I think at that point I had gotten sober. And what happened during that point to get me there is that after my mom died, I did have a little bit of a drinking spree. And one morning I got up and said, I'm not going to go to work today. I think I'm just going to go for a drive. I just got in my car and I thought, you know, I could just drive off the side of the road. That would be okay. Everybody would be okay. I have life insurance. The kids would be okay. At that point, I felt like I wasn't doing anything right or good for anybody. And I remember I got up to Blue Ridge, and I sat there in front of the train track, you know, where they have the, it's like a sightseeing train sitting there, and I thought, you know, I could just lay down on that track. And then I thought, wow, that train doesn't move very often. It probably would take a while. No, that's probably not a good idea. I'll go find a train track with more, you know, Marietta, the one in Marietta. That one I would definitely get it. But I just, you know, I thought of all these different things I could do to off myself. And that was just one day of it, really. I never dwelled on it for very long, but just that day, something in me was like, you really, you know, nobody really needs you. You're not really good for anybody. You're not participating in life, you know. There's no value in your life. I came home that day and I called a friend of mine, who I'd known in the program from the year before, and I said, I need help. And she said, what can I do? I said, can I just come over and hang out? And she said, yeah, come on over. So I went over there and I hung out with her. We went to a meeting up here at 11 o'clock, which is a meeting that I first came into the year before. That was my home group, was the WAY group. That's where I met Denise and my first sponsor. And I said, I need to get back in the program. And I did. I just cried. I sat there and cried. And that whole day, just having someone to call, that's why it's so important, you know, having those phone lists, having those people that you can call, because you never know when you're going to have one of those days when you really need somebody. The year before when I came in 2014, I called my sister who had been in the program. She got sober at Peachford back when I was in high school. And I said, I need you to take me to Ridgeview. I need an evaluation. I'm not right. There's something wrong here. And she goes, why do you want me to take you? Can't you just drive yourself? And I said, but what if they want me to stay? You know? And she goes, well, why would they want you to stay? I'm like, Cindy, just take me, okay? She's one of these, she never leaves her home. So it was really big for her to drive me to Ridgeview. So after I did my evaluation back in 2014, they were like, okay, you need to come to the outpatient program. This is how much it's going to cost. Just do this every day for 30 days. And I just lost my job. So I was like, I can't afford that. That's all the money I had. So that's how I got into AA. And I really didn't know anything about the program. I really didn't. All I knew is the day I came in and I sat over there in that room, I heard people say things that were like part of my life, you know? And I'm like, how do they know that? How can that happen to somebody else? You know, that's when I realized I'm not special. I cried and cried. I mean, I just sat there and cried like a baby. And I knew that that's where I needed to be. And I was coming back the next day because I needed to hear that. I needed to hear that. And I needed to be with those people that were like me. Because nobody else that I knew was like me, that I know of, you know. Yes. And then the first meeting I came to at Hillside, I walked in, I was like, is that Donna? And she was like, me! I'm like, am I supposed to know that I know you? Yeah, it was really weird because you really don't know how to act, you know, when you first come in. It's like when you see somebody you know. But I think that's what happened. You know, my life before was chaotic. When I heard the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I said, my life was so unmanageable. I don't know about being powerless over alcohol. That took me a minute. But being unmanageable, yes, I got that. I got it. I was in debt to everybody. I lived paycheck to paycheck. I must have spent a lot of money on alcohol and cigarettes. Because after I got sober and started working the program, I had money. It's really weird, isn't it? I don't have to live paycheck to paycheck anymore. And it's not like I'm making a whole lot more. In fact, I'm probably making less than I did then. But it's just an amazing thing The one thing I was taught is that you do the next right thing. If you don't know what to do, you do the next right thing. And I heard someone say in a meeting that I didn't know what to do. All this company was there. They were stressing me out. I didn't want to drink, but I saw this pile of dishes. So I just went and I started washing dishes. And I'm like, oh my God, that's perfect. It sounds so simple, but just doing the next right thing. If I'm in an uncomfortable place where I don't know anybody, I will sit there and help them put food away and wash the dishes and move chairs and do whatever I can do to feel like I'm being of service. And when you do the next right thing every day, sooner or later, your life becomes right. You know, it just becomes right. And it's because of God. Because I can't do any of this on my own. None of us can do this on our own. You know, they say it's a program, a spiritual program. And it's based on our spiritual condition, our daily reprieve from alcohol. And without this program, you know, it seems like it's really simple. Well, yeah, it is really simple. 'Cause God wants me to do the next right thing. To me, that means get up, brush your teeth, take a shower. Sometimes we, you know, we're like, what do I do? Do your prayers and meditation. Go to work every day. That's doing the next right thing. Actually showing up and being present. That's doing the next right thing. Being there for my kids. And oh my God, that was a huge amends. But you know what? They said, Mom, it's okay. You're doing the right thing now. We're so proud of you. You know, so it's been a living amends with them. They know I always love them no matter what. But God, I made some stupid choices. I brought a person in the home that nobody knew. He was a freaking criminal. I mean, you could have Googled him. I mean, I did. I did Google him after the fact. And I didn't like what was in there. And so when it was really funny how he got out of there. Actually, he had to do an eviction notice. And I went to the judge to get the eviction notice. And I said, does it matter that he's in jail right now? He said, it doesn't. What's his last known address? Mine. Okay, there you go. And so that's how I got him out, because he wasn't going to leave. I had to take my daughter and go to somebody else's house because he would not leave my house. And the police wouldn't take him away because he got, let me tell you this just for future reference. Somebody gets mail at your house, they're a resident.
No.
By law. Yeah. So I can, you know, I can change the locks. I can call the police. It doesn't matter. They're not going to take him anywhere. So my neighbors got together and he went and borrowed one of their cell phones. And so the girl called and he hadn't brought it back yet. He came back to the house to harass me. And she was over there like, where's my cell phone? She called on her friend's cell phone and said, this guy has just stolen my phone. So they came and picked him up for stealing her cell phone. That's how he got in jail. And then I got to follow the yay neighbors. Woohoo! None of them wanted him there. So that just goes to show you that my great picking, my picker's broken, as they say. I think a lot of the insecurity in life and as alcoholics comes from various things. I've heard a lot of people talk about their early lives, you know, bad home life and that sort of thing. And my mom never worked outside the home. She was raising kids. They were moving around a lot. And when my dad retired in 62, I was born in 66, and she decided she wanted to go to work. So there I was. I'm like, okay. I have abandonment issues. Maya had a nanny that was wonderful, Lizzie. I thought she should live with us. But my mom wasn't home. And I didn't realize that until I got the program and started doing my fourth step. And I realized that was part of it. But that's the great thing about this program. You uncover all this stuff, you know, and then you gotta deal with it. And, but The good thing is that your sponsor has dealt with this stuff before, so they know how to do it. Maybe your grand sponsor, other friends in the program, and God helps you through all that, you know, to relieve, because those resentments can cause you to drink again, and we don't want those. So that's, you know, how I do it today. I just, I don't call my sponsor as much as I should, but I'll text her sometimes. I get up and do my prayers and my devotion. I even have this music that the cats really like. And before you know it, they're in there and they're all like really dedicated music. They're dead with their legs crossed. They because in the morning, especially the little one, she's like a crazy cat. She's all over the place. I turn that music on and she just calms down. I don't know what it is. But probably at the same time she's getting worn out. But you know, I have a routine now. And routine is great for me anyway. I know it is for a lot of people, but I can't do without my routine. If my routine gets off, like if I have the wrong coffee creamer, that's just not a good day. I've got to make sure I've got my hazelnut coffee creamer. I have to go by Kroger and get it. Could be 10 o'clock at night. My Colombian coffee, my coffee in the morning, my prayers and meditation. I go to work. I have a gratefulness journal now, a gratitude journal that I write what I'm grateful for. And I love your view gratefulness. That's so cool. I love that on your Caring Bridge. But, you know, just being full, overflowing with gratefulness, because, you know, life is not easy, and we go through a lot. Life happens. It will just happen. It doesn't matter. You know, it can mess up your routine. I'm better with it now when I get my routine messed up. I used to not be. I used to drink over it. You know, and I thank God that the things that have happened in my life have brought me to a place that was so much better for me than I can ever imagine. I mean, I was, when I got sober in 2015, I was working in, I just started working in Rome, and I was driving an hour to work, listening to those CDs, thank God for those, praying. I had a lot of time to pray, you know, and that was a great spiritual time. But it gets old after a while. It gets to be a long drive. And I wanted to find something closer to home. And this job came up that was just not in my, it was in the medical field, but not in what I had, I'd always been on the hospital side and hospital revenue. And this was an office manager position. And I was like, they probably don't want to talk to me. I'm going to put my resume out there, but, and they saw me on LinkedIn and they wanted to talk to me. And that was a God thing. That was a total God thing. Now I'm working in Marietta, last 3.5 years. They love me. I love them. I have a great staff. Everybody's, you know, it's just, I mean, that is when you truly let go and let God, it's amazing what can happen. And I know those sayings are so silly, it seems like, but first things first, let go and let God, all those things will come back in your mind. And I love it too, if you have never gone back out and drank after you, you know, got sober the first time, it does mess up your drinking. It sure does. You sit there and think, how much have I had? Maybe I need to drink some water. Maybe I need to just stop. I really don't need to do this, God. Yeah, what do I need to do? Maybe I should go home and do this. Or just not do it at all. There you go. I saw this the other day, and I love hearing things that remind me of this. I'm saying I haven't heard it in a long time. But in working with others, it talks about, speaking of jobs, job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house. And that, I mean, for so many years I relied on relationships. I relied on other people. I pretty much would become whatever you wanted me to be in a relationship, you know, and then I would resent them for it. And this is so true because no matter what, we have to place our dependence on God. God is bigger than anything. And my sponsor reminded me that God loves us so much that we're able to love others, you know. I mean, if you don't believe that God loves everyone as much as he can love everyone, then we can't love everybody the way we should, you know. And I probably messed that up. But I think that the things that I've learned in here are just, I can't really say into words what it means to me. What it means to me to have all of you guys, to have this safe place to come and talk about these things. And even, you know, when things aren't always sunshine and rainbows, you know, life happens. And we have a safe place that we can go and talk about it. And there are people out there that don't have that. I wish everybody had it. You know, I wish I could tell all my friends at work, come to AA. You'll love it. You know, or all my family members, you know, we all have the family members that, you know, probably do well in the program. I think everybody would do well with the program. But, I mean, now I have wonderful things in my life that I never dreamed possible. And it's all because of this program. And working it every day. So, was that enough dirt? How much time do I have? Somebody said, is it going to be juicy? Where's Ann? Is she here? She's like, no, Ann Wade, she said, is it going to be juicy? Is it going to be... I said, well, no, not really. But I thank you all for listening. And, you know, it works if you work it. That's all I can say. Thank you.